I do this for my culture. Welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks, as we have another great show for you lined up tonight. We're going to talk about the opening of our General Assembly legislative session that's happening in our state capital, Annapolis. That kicked off today. We'll be talking to Delegate Mary Washington in a few moments about what we can expect coming out of the state capital. A lot of bills that are generally out there, on average, about 2,500 pieces of legislation. Can you believe that? Woo! That they have to try to address issues, big issues, small issues that they try to address on a statewide level. And those, it's just amazing. 2,500 pieces. So we'll talk to her. Plus, I got to talk to her, talk to you about this whole federal shutdown. We haven't really talked about it on our show here, but, you know, it seems to be an ongoing situation. The president had his conversation last night, and it seemed like, I don't know if anybody took note of this part, but did you notice that the president probably had the shortest primetime presidential speech in history? I think it was like 8 minutes or something. I was like, oh, I'm going to read about what the... Let me turn it to the president. Usually, you know, you have like 8 to 9 minutes. And Alex, you tell me if I'm wrong how long the president's speech was last night. But I was thinking to myself, like, what? We're asking for $5 billion in 8 minutes? Like, what? What happened? I know people that talk longer for 20. Let me just for $20. That's all I'm saying. For $20. Hey man, you know, I'm really strapped. You know what I'm saying? You know, things just got out of hand and you know, I couldn't allow myself and I made some bad decisions last week. So then I had to take, they give you that much longer. President coming in like, look, we're going to do this. I'm going to push this wall. It's going to be a fantastic venture. God bless America. He'd be like, Mr. President, it was God bless America. It was God. 9 minutes and 31 seconds. Exactly, folks. Talking about being a pitch man. Oh, my goodness. 9 minutes and 31 seconds. And guess what? I just want you to cough up $5 billion. I wish I can do that. I wish I can have. Could you imagine somebody? Hey, man, I just need 9 minutes and 31 seconds. So we got to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, I'm going to have my special one-on-one conversation with Dr. Ava Muhammad, the spiritual advisor, the scholar, activist, attorney, and author. She's going to talk to us about this larger case of the case of separation through independence. And this has been an ongoing conversation. But we're going to talk a little bit about this as well and reparations. And I definitely want to pick her brain about what she thinks about immigration in this Trump border wall situation. So should be very interesting. But it's Wednesday, folks. And in the words of the great Geico commercial, it's hump day. I don't know. They've been playing the old Geico commercials lately. Have you been seeing them? The ones that you, the best of Geico commercials? That's probably one of my favorite. Hump Day! Okay. All right. I guess nobody else was feeling it. You don't feel the hump day. Okay. All right. Anyway. but we're going to have those conversations. Let's kick off a little bit talking about what's happening down in Annapolis. Because if you did not know that our legislative session starts, it actually goes from January the 9th through April 8th. And here's a little civics for you folks. This is the big session where our state lawmakers go down to the state capitol and hash out, argue, debate, try to figure out what to do about big issues affecting the great state of Maryland, try to figure out how to allocate money that the state of Maryland has brought in, and how to deal with all of the resources and the lack of resources. And it's a big, big deal. Let me just say, though, there were some big things that we can expect for this upcoming General Assembly. New to the job, 60 legislators are taking office following the 2018 midterm election, 43 in the House and 17 in the Senate, although some, such as the delegates moving up to the Senate, have been in Annapolis before. So you got a lot of new faces down in Annapolis. If you're a new face and you were voted in by the people, for the people, you're all Democratic. Can we give a round of applause? Dre, I need a round of applause for all of those new folks down in Annapolis. Yeah, man, this would be a lot of fun. We're going to keep the applause going. Hold on, Dre. Hold on. Hold on, people. Hold on. I'm so sorry. Hold on. Hold on. I know. Hold on, folks. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Okay. You're too kind. You're too kind. Women in office. 71 legislators. That means that are about nearly 39%. Of our state legislators are women, 15 in the Senate and 56 in the House. And that's something to get excited about. Dre Day, that's something to get excited about, right? That's right. 71 legislators are women. There we go. Yep, that's very exciting. Now, you want to talk about how important this situation is down in Annapolis. I'm going to tell you how important it is. I'm going to give you 44.6 billion reasons why these sessions that we generally don't pay a lot of attention to are really important. $44.6 billion operating budget, folks. $44.6 billion. That was approved in the 2018 session for the fiscal year that began in July 1st of 2018 as well. So, you know, the fiscal year for the state of Maryland is July 1st through June 30th, but $44.6 billion operating budget. Yeah, if you didn't know that about how much money the state is really handling and dealing with, now you know. $44.6 billion. This is good. Check this out. On the flip side, that's the operating budget. The revenue, there's an expected about $18.1 billion for the general fund during the fiscal year that starts July 1st of 2019. An expected $18 billion in revenue. The state is bringing in some money. But considering the operating budget is about $44 billion, it's like, man. So when we have the conversations about all of the things that we see happening in and around our state, I want you to just kind of keep in mind, if you got a $44 billion account, you know, it sounds good on paper. Mm-hmm. It does. It's just like any one of our salaries, right? It's like our salary. You know how you first get that job? And I remember I got a job and I was so excited for the salary. And then guess what happened? Life. I realized that after I got this high-paying, well-paying job, I'm like, oh, boy, I'm going to be... You know how you make these grandiose plans for those big money? Oh, I'm going to go on a cruise, baby. Yeah, woo! Oh, baby, are we going to go on a vacation this year? Next thing you know, you realize that you're not making enough money. You're like, how did I get to that point? I just got out of making $25,000. I went up to $50,000, and I'm still not making enough money. That's what the state says. We're bringing in this much, but we cost this much. So you got to figure it all out. You got to be creative. You got to figure it all out. Like, what is going on? But again, that's a lot of money that's coming in. But again, the operating budget for our state is nearly $45 billion. Wow. And also, speaking of money, if you did not know, here's a little fun fact, that the average salary for our legislators, the base salary, is $50,330. And they received $47 a day for meals and $106 a night for lodging. That's for, you know, when you're going in and out of Annapolis and things like that. You have a meal card, like back in college, $47 a day for meals. That's a big meal. That's a nice steak dinner. Yeah, for one. That's for one. All right, but we're gonna delve into it because I'm really wondering what are some of the top bills or top things that we want to see. Wouldn't you want to know that? You know, wouldn't you want to know that? You know, like what are folks focusing on? Years ago, it was dealing with police reform, and I'm wondering, is that still going to be the case? I know that since then, since the Freddie Gray uprising, then there's also the issue of schools. You know, how much money is getting into schools? We've been talking about schools. This is actually those two things themselves. This is actually the time to have those conversations. So if you haven't had a chance to go down to Annapolis, I'm going to also share with you that on February the 7th, and we'll make sure that we're going to put this out there again, Baltimore Day in Annapolis, which is hosted by the mayor's office, where you have an opportunity to go down to Annapolis and to just look and get a sense of how these decisions are made. This is a very, very, I mean, you're talking about something that's very informative. To know that there are discussions, testimonies, and all of these things that are happening, and they're happening on the behalf of bills and policies and legislation that is really for us. That's really for us. But you got to know how your government works. I can't stress that enough. You got to know how your government works. But when it comes to policing and to school issues, these are the things that the state plays a significant role in. Significant. All right, let's talk to our first guest tonight. She's calling live from Annapolis. She only got a few minutes, so we are certainly grateful for her time. We have Delegate Mary Washington on the line. And Delegate, thank you so much for checking in and joining us here on For the Culture on WEAA.
Hi, thank you so much for this opportunity and educating people. Actually, I was just sworn in as the senator.
Oh, the senator. We apologize. Yes, Senator Mary, let's give her a round of applause. Let's give Senator Mary Washington. Yes. There's nothing like a state senator, man.
So, yes, thank you so much. Yeah, that was just as of 12 o'clock. Up until 11:59, I was your delegate and honored to be that.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Well, congratulations, Senator. So, Senator Mary Washington, let's talk a little bit about it. I know you got a few moments. What are some of the big things that are on the agenda, especially for some of the black lawmakers down in Annapolis this year?
So thank you for that. This morning, the Legislative Black Caucus, and our new chairman is Delegate Daryl Barnes from Prince George's County, a great leader. We had a press conference this morning outlining a few issues. One is a healthcare-related issue, raising the age of smoking to 21.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. As many of you may know, certainly deaths by cigarette smoking or having the cause of cigarette smoking is one of the easiest preventable diseases. And so they estimate if we're able to raise the age of smoking to 21, that we could save the lives or lengthen the lives of more than 9,000 Marylanders. And a disproportionate number of them, you know, are African Americans, are young people living in urban centers. And
Right. For
a long time, it was going down. Smoking was going down. But with all these new ways of smoking, you know, various pipes and vaping and all of that,
yeah.
Cigarette smoking has gone up. So that was that's something.
So, Senator, real quick, I'm just wondering, Senator, how is smoking, especially when you're talking about vaping, how are these things being classified? Is this going to fall anywhere near the opioid under the opioid umbrella? Because there are so many different ways that people are inhaling now.
Oh, that's interesting. You're right. This one is just being old school and just raising
just keeping it smoking.
The ability to smoke tobacco, cigarettes.
Yes,
go,
ma'am.
Go into the corner store and buy a pack of cigarettes. Now you have to be, you know, with this proposal, you would have to be 21.
Gotcha. Got you.
Show ID.
Now, are vendors and merchants, are they pushing back on that in any way? Are we seeing something?
There will be some resistance. There will be some resistance.
Are you kidding me?
That want to continue to sell tobacco products to young people.
Wow.
And, you know, the Legislative Black Caucus, in alignment with a lot of other environmental and public health advocates, have joined together.
Okay.
Looking at the intersection of race when it comes to these types of health issues.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're going to see a lot more coalitions in this legislative session among different groups that aren't typically thought of as working together. And this is one. The other one is raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
So that's the big one.
That is the big one.
So how much of a momentum do you foresee that particular piece of legislation having? Because I know in Baltimore City, that has been in constant conversation. But how does that particular issue sit statewide? Is that a big conversation in Calvin County and Prince George's County and other counties?
We know that it is time statewide to raise the minimum wage in Maryland to $15 an hour.
Okay.
No one should work a full-time job and not be able to afford their rent or be able to pay the rent and make sure that their children, for example, have clothing. That's the minimum amount that a family, a working person can make to have a basic standard of living. And actually, it's below what it really needs to be because of the Baltimore region, the Washington, D.C. region.
Yes.
Housing costs are so high.
Yes.
It really should be $20 an hour.
Yeah.
But $15 is a great. And again, it's an issue where labor advocates and work advocates are combining with women advocates and African Americans, because the people who are in low wage jobs
right.
are disproportionately women,
yes.
and disproportionately African Americans or people of color. And so again, this is an opportunity where you're going to see in the 2019 session people forming coalitions to work together for things that benefit us all.
Senator, the other question I have about this is because we don't have. When you raise the working wage, what about the other pieces in terms of that quality of life spectrum? People say that everything else tends to go up. How will that be balanced, or how will that be considered in this session?
Well, I think we're seeing that the prices are going up anyway, right?
Right.
They've made that argument that, well, if you raise the minimum wage, we're going to automate more jobs. I don't know if you've been into a Royal Farms lately, but now you don't even talk to a person at the register anymore. You just type it in. Or if you're going to the Giant, you just type in your order.
And that's such a disgrace. Senator, it's such a disgrace. I got to place my chicken order at Royal Farms through a computer.
That's right. And so they tell you, well, the story has been that if you raise wages, then we're going to automate and people lose jobs.
Yeah.
But guess what? They're already doing it.
Wow.
So now all we're saying is that we want working people to share in the profits and that they pay them a fair wage.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And is this considering that this particular piece of legislation impacts the black community, I would say even more significantly, where does the Legislative Black Caucus sit in making sure that this happens and that this doesn't get stalled either at the beginning, middle, or the end of the session?
Well, as our chairman of the Legislative Black Caucus said this morning, legislators of color, African-American legislators, there are more of us than have ever been, and that we are a significant number of votes that are needed to pass anything, and that this, in fact, is the number one priority of the Legislative Black Caucus.
Fantastic.
And again, combining with other union members and NAACP testified today and a number of organizations, this is a priority. And in fact, a few people in leadership said this is going to happen. The trick is what the listeners need to listen for, mm-hmm. is that when we pass a minimum wage, we need to make sure that it passes for every county, mm-hmm. and that no one's exempted,
yeah.
that certain businesses aren't exempted, and that it is passed clean. And so that is what we need you to, what I'm asking you to ask the listeners to ask for: a clean bill, a bill where you're not creating exemptions, a bill that's not being phased in over 25 years.
Mm.
You know, a bill where, yes, we need to give businesses a time to adapt, but, you know, something where we're talking about 2-3 years phased in.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We definitely will keep our eyes on that. Is there any other piece of legislation or any other issue, Senator, that we need to, stay posted on?
Well, definitely, you know, I will be serving on the judicial proceedings, and you said earlier you talked about law enforcement reform, criminal
right.
justice reform. You know, there's all the talk about crime rates and high crime rates. We really, really have to keep an eye on the recommendations. And just because people might offer more police or say that they're willing to pay for their own private police to help keep us safe,
mm-hmm.
we have to really be cautious of the civil liberties implications of these and make sure that we stay committed to having a public law enforcement, and that we are also looking at the social determinants of violence and crime and behavioral health, unemployment, making sure that housing, the recreation centers, that all of the things that we know keep communities safe and healthy,
mm-hmm.
that is a part of any type of package that is passed for Baltimore City, or more generally when we're talking about issues of substance abuse in the surrounding counties.
Absolutely.
We can't have these one-off piecemeal approaches
right.
for a bunch of police here, more guns here, arrest
right.
more of these people. We really have to demand better. And looking forward to all of us advocating something that's going to be sustainable and positive.
Senator, I know we got a few moments left. Really quickly, where do we stand with funding for schools in Baltimore City? Where does that fit on the larger agenda?
Again, very disappointed that we're not moving forward to creating a new formula. And so we are going to need to see how we're going to address the rising need for funding public education across the state, not just in Baltimore City. But there is some good news. It does look like we're going to be moving forward on expansion of pre-K.
Okay.
Making sure that we have that.
Yeah.
It looks like we're going to be moving forward to make sure that we're in a position to recruit and to maintain our professional teachers,
mm-hmm.
By making sure they're being paid wages that are good. And also we need to recruit and make sure that we're recruiting people, you know, from Morgan, from Morehouse, from Spelman, from Bowie, so that more of the young people who are in our schools are being taught by people who look like them, and also being taught by people who are being trained with cultural competence and understand the specific issues facing young people in our public system.
Senator, is there going to be any talk about more money for infrastructure repair? So that way we don't...
Well, we always talk about that.
Yeah, we got to talk about the capital budget, right?
We do. We definitely need our capital budget, our roads, the schools. There's definitely... thanks for reminding me. There's definitely some initiatives and ideas about spending an additional $200 million on capital improvements in schools, an aging school system, aging school program. And There's a lot. There's a lot. You know, okay, over 2,000 bills get listened to, get introduced over the course of this next 90 days.
That's amazing. It's amazing. So, you know, first, Senator, we appreciate your time. We're going to do our best and do our due diligence here at WEAA and on For the Culture to make sure that we keep our listeners posted. But, of course, we want to be a part of the conversation. So we certainly would love to bring you back on, especially as it gets closer to the time where Baltimoreans, Baltimore citizens are able to join you and your colleagues for the Baltimore Day in Annapolis and all the way up. All the way up until the end of the session. So this is going to be the first of many conversations that we hope to have with you, Senator.
Could I just do a quick shout out?
No, Senator, you can't. Sure you can.
Morgan State University is in the 43rd District, so all folks there are welcome. But that's our night, so please put that on the calendar.
I appreciate that. Senator Mary Washington of the 43rd District checking in, giving us a little bit of a sneak peek of what we can expect at this year's General Assembly legislative session as the lawmakers take to our state capitol in Annapolis to get some things done. Senator, thank you so much for being on For the Culture here on WEAA. We appreciate it.
Thank you for your great work. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Folks, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we're talking about federal workers, the shutdown. Should federal workers work regardless of not being paid? Join us in a conversation, 410-319-8888. And also later, we have our 101 with Dr. Ava Muhammad. So much to get to. Stay riding with me. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. We want to just switch gears just a little bit, talking a little bit about politics. But, you know, I've been watching how this whole shutdown situation has been happening. And there are a lot of tentacles to this octopus because you have so many moving parts. And I mean, we can certainly say that it was the president. The president said that he was going to take matters into his hands in this way. Maybe about a few weeks ago when he sat down with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the top Democratic leaders in Congress. And he said that he would be willing to take the blame for the shutdown until his border wall is funded. And it's interesting to see how you have this president that is hell-bent on trying to get this thing done without truly, truly thinking things through, right? The impact on the American people, and especially families, those who are working class members, working middle class folks, and the impact that it will have on us. This is the situation that we're finding ourselves in as a country. Because part of it for me is getting out of this space of not wanting to cooperate and to work with one another, to get out of this space of arrogance, to get out of this space of obnoxiousness. I mean, you got all of these different elements. And it's creating this storm. And when we have our own American government that is led by an individual who is moving and deciding to move in this direction, right? Not really thinking things through. Like not thinking of things through, folks. I mean, this shutdown is costing this country millions of dollars. There's talk about folks not getting their tax refunds. There's talk about, not just folks not getting paid for their work, you know, payroll being messed up. There's talk about food stamps being put on hold. I mean, look at this. Look at this. So tonight, I want us to talk about this because if you are a federal worker and you are willing to share your story and how this shutdown is impacting you, I want you to give me a call, 410-319-8880. I just want to talk to us a little bit really quickly because one of the major groups of folks that have been impacted by the shutdown is TSA. And also another group of folks, these are the TSA, of course, these are the staff that work at the airports. But also another group of folks are the like correctional facilities, the employees of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They have one union president. His name is Eric Young. He's the president of the union that represents approximately 30,000 employees of the Federal Bureau of Prisons who are working during the shutdown. His members, which are scattered at 122 facilities, largely located in rural areas across the country, aren't being paid and don't know when their next paycheck will come. And he said, in his personal opinion, this shutdown constitutes involuntary servitude. Involuntary servitude. Now, this is only after, I believe we're in shutdown. This is day 18, if I'm not mistaken. I want to double check with Alex. But involuntary servitude, day 18. People are already panicking. Now, you've listened to the president's 9-minute, 31-second speech last night. The president was making a plea. He was making a plea about needing to fund this wall. And he even went as far as to say this, folks. This is interesting. He said, quote, some have suggested a barrier is immoral. Then why do wealthy politicians, like you, Mr. President, build walls, fences, and gates around their homes? They don't build walls because they hate the people on the outside, but because they love the people on the inside. Let me tell you, I study communications in school, folks. That is classic communications 101. On how to, what they call, spin the narrative. Folks, you do not build a wall just to protect the people inside of the house. You are building a wall to defend yourselves against the elements outside of the wall. Okay? The president went on to say, the only thing that is immoral is the politicians to do nothing and continue to allow more innocent people to be so horribly victimized. So he's created, in his 9-minute, 31-second commercial, he created the spin on what the Republicans in Congress need to do. He gave them an out on what they need to say when they go to their constituents to essentially justify setting money aside or taking money out of other places, because you know this, we just don't have as a government $5 billion just lying around. That has to come from somewhere. That 9-minute, 31-second commercial last night was a way for the Republican Congress members to try to figure this thing out, to justify it to their constituents. But it's so much deeper than this. This is not just about a wall, folks. There are so many layers and elements to it, and we may not be able to, I know we're not going to be able to get to them all tonight, but it's so much deeper than this. As you say, as I pointed out, Mr. Eric Young, of the president of this union of Federal Bureau of Prison Employees, he's saying it's involuntary servitude. And that's, you know, we've been there. We already been there. There's another part of this. He's not and here's the sad part, that he can't urge his union members not to go to work. This is the important part for us to keep in mind. He can't tell them, hey, don't go to work. So, you know, in New York City, at JFK Airport, about 174 workers had called out at one day in response to the situation. He said he can't also call for to we can't call or advocate for a strike. Like, you gotta go to work, even though you don't know when you're getting paid. Involuntary servitude. Is that where we are right now? Is this forcing federal workers to go to work a form of involuntary servitude, modern slavery? And we only in day 18, folks. And at the way things are going, we don't know when an agreement will be made. Let's go to the phone lines. Maybe somebody can help me in understanding this situation. 410-319-8888. Let's kick it off. Let's go to Mr. B., who is a federal employee. Mr. B., thank you for checking in, sir. What's your take on this?
Hey, good evening. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Mr. B. How are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. I'm frustrated. I'm hanging in there. And I'm just calling in to, vent and just converse.
Go ahead and vent, bro.
It's just frustrating, man, to be a pawn in this man's game. Lives are at stake. And it hurts to be have this feeling of helplessness. Mm. To deal with having to call your creditors and make arrangements to make payments on things that it's not, I'm late on things and it's not my fault.
So that was and Mr. B, if you don't mind me asking, because this was something that I have been thinking about in a situation like this, because this is not a quote unquote company situation, but this is a government situation, right? Would not the creditors be more understanding? Are they still saying, well, Mr. B, you still have to pay on that car note, this or that, and all of these things? Or they say, you know what, we're going to hold. Like, I'm wondering about that. What have they told you?
So far, the credit card companies are the absolute worst.
Wow.
You know, the few that I've talked to thus far has said, oh, we have a program for you, but it requires you closing your account and doing this, that, and the other thing. And no, that's not what I want.
They want you to start all over again.
Yeah, yeah. And, it took me a long time to get to this point, man. And it's, like I said, it's extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
But...
So I'm assuming you're a part of a union, right, Mr. B?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what is your union doing or saying to you and to your colleagues?
Right now, it's just a matter of just wait and see. They have the policies in place where you... have to report in a certain amount of time if you're, an accepted employee or what have you.
Right.
If you don't report in, you could be classified as AWOL.
Really? So, and you could be penalized for that.
Yeah. So you're going to tell me I'm AWOL for, coming into work and not get paid. And, it's beyond frustrating, man. It really is.
Now, real final question, Mr. B. How long have you been working for the federal government?
10 plus years.
10 plus years. There have been talks of shutdowns before. Have you ever felt? Has it ever gotten this far in based upon your experience?
The longest one that I remember was under President Obama's administration.
Right.
The thing about that was, we knew that, there was going to be an end in sight, and, the communication was there, and, we were confident, that it, although it was, I think it was 12, 15, 18 days, however long it was, we knew that, work was in progress,
mm-hmm.
and there were willing parties, and again, we knew it was going to come to an end. But here, some people are saying, March, and it's all over the map, just like the dialogue coming from the White House. So it's not promising at all.
Mr. B, I have to say thank you for checking in, and hopefully, and we're going to be praying for your family as well as so many other families that are impacted by this, but. I share in your frustration and really I'm disheartened and disappointed, because now we are constituents that are part of a government that allows something like this happening, and it doesn't seem like there is really some real consideration of all of those things. So, Mr. B, I appreciate your time and sharing your story tonight. And like I said, may God be with you and your family, brother.
I bless you, and I appreciate the opportunity to converse with you and vent a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anytime, anytime. Let's go to our next federal employee, Mr. M. Mr. M, thank you for checking in. How are you today?
Hello. Thank you, Faraj, for taking my call. I'm just fine, sir, and you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Mr. M, talk to us about your situation. I mean, this is how is this weighing on you and your family and your loved ones?
Yes. First of all, I'm a 16-year federal employee, and basically this is pretty much the way the government or the federal government works now with a policy or a practice of not having a set budget. We work on a continued resolution, and that's been going on for several administrations now. I know the earlier caller, I think he was 2 years in.
He said 10 years in.
So, I'm sorry?
10 years.
10 years?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the way the federal government works. So I guess this is more of a suggestion to other federal employees is to really set themselves up or at least attempt. I know everyone's situation is different, so I'll tread lightly. But to kind of set their finances up to weather these type of things and possibly set aside money when times are normal or good or however you want to term it, to set aside at least 6 months worth of salary aside. I know that can be difficult.
Yes, it can be.
It would be better to live a little bit less during the normal times so that you can keep yourself afloat during times like these. That's just a general practice that I keep that, you know, even though I would have to do without or live beneath my means, it really comes in handy during times like these when, you know, you're without a paycheck. That's just a systemic way that the government works now, and you just never know. When they want to make a point, you could be without a paycheck.
Wow.
That's just the facts.
And you know, I'm thinking, Mr. M, when I was younger, people had always advocated to go to school, get a great education, and essentially get a good government job, because there was a certain level of certainty, stability, and security there, right? What do we say, how do we have these conversations with the next generation from your vantage point?
Yeah, those days are gone as far as the federal government, but this is like a lesson that anyone can take a page out of. I mean, it's just not good to live paycheck to paycheck if you can possibly set aside, you know, if you give to your church 10%, I would say give 10% to yourself before you go out and buy, you know, luxury items or things that aren't absolutely essential.
Right.
Set 10% aside for times like these. You could have illnesses. This is beyond the federal government, just as a way of managing your life, just good financial stability.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely right. That's a great recommendation. I love the fact that you're suggesting, hey, create a little nest egg and put that aside for a few months. And you're absolutely right. Start getting into that process because, unfortunately, folks, it's not as secure as it used to be. The politics can override the money in this case, and the politics can override your interests. So that's the hard part, and that's the hard pill that we got to swallow in this.
Well, one more thing real
yes,
quick,
sir.
For Raji. You were saying that the union president said that he wouldn't suggest the Bureau of Prison staff to call out from work. Well, I mean, that's a no-brainer because you have people in custody who are locked up who can't do for themselves.
Exactly.
Because, you know, they can't go out and buy groceries or anything.
Right.
So we have a moral obligation
there it is.
To come to work.
You're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I know that whether it's for you or Mr. B or many other federal employees that work in these departments of the governments that are pertinent departments like the IRS and other places, other agencies, that's the part. Like, that's where you have to become much more of a citizen. You got to be like super citizen at that point. And Mr. M, I appreciate you for checking in. Thank you so much for sharing those recommendations. But you got to be like super citizen in order to get through this moment to understand the moral impact of not going to work. I mean, of course, the prison kind of speaks for itself. But if you're working for these other agencies and you're not getting money for your time, but you know that that agency is important for the well-being of other families, you become like a superhero. I mean, with limited resources, you shining through. And that's why I say, if you know a federal employee or anybody that's impacted by this, let's do our best to at least show that compassion for them and keep them in our hearts and spirits and our prayers, because this is a hard time. You don't go to work. You're not getting paid for weeks on end. And the bills are piling up. It sometimes takes so much more effort and time and money to bounce back. Let's go to Ms. J, contractor for the federal government. Ms. J, thank you so much for checking in. How have you been dealing with this whole shutdown, Ms. J?
Well, actually, I just wanted to provide a little piece of information regarding
sure.
involuntary servitude.
Sure.
I don't know if you may or may not know this, but a couple of years ago, I forget the year, and I don't remember the number of the executive order that was signed under President Obama, and I love President Obama, but it kind of made involuntary servitude in the case of national security.
Mm.
It was an executive order that did that. It established that. In fact, I think I learned it from a talk show on your station. I'm just saying, you know, that's some information that you can slide in there. He actually signed an executive order allowing for involuntary servitude in cases of national security. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, Ms. J, don't get it. Don't open Pandora's box and then drop the mic and walk off the stage. No, because this is a case. That's what the president said last night in his opening remarks. He said, my fellow Americans, tonight I'm speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border.
Right.
He put it as a state of national security.
That's right. So that he could put into effect pull out that executive order that was, it was within the past 2-3 years.
Yeah.
I forget the number, but it's in existence. I looked it up.
Absolutely. Ms. J, but you said that you have been okay. You and your family, how have they been able to deal with this?
Well, we don't do too much because anything you do costs money. So
yeah.
limited travel and eating a lot of ramen noodles.
Wow.
So that's it. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, Ms. J, thank you so much for your time. Folks, I'm serious, man. And this, see, these are the moments where you make yourself, you question the morality of people in political power. You're like, oh my, how can you do this? Mr. President. Oh, Mr. President. It took you 9 minutes and 31 seconds to ask a primetime request for $5 billion. But yet in 18 days, you have yet to come up with a solution on how to get there. Again, our hearts and prayers are going out to the families that are impacted by the shutdown. And we will certainly do our part to make sure that we will use this platform to speak out so that things like this not just don't happen, but more importantly, that we can stay prepared for this. Because folks, I'm telling you, I don't think a lot of our people, our family members, community members were prepared for this. They weren't. And I'm with Mr. B and all of the others. Got to put a little nest egg aside. And I'm going to say, you got to do that just in general nowadays, because a lot of these companies aren't as strong and stable and secure as we once thought they were. So we got to think about the future. And the best way to think about the future is planning for it. We got to take a quick pause. When we come back, our one-on-one with Dr. Ava Muhammad talked to us about the case for separation through independence. I'm going to ask her some questions about reparations, the president's remarks last night, and of course, I'll open up the phone lines for you to join the conversation. Stay riding with us. A whole lot coming up in the second.